Well, thank you, Diane, for your kind introduction. And thank you for all the work that you are doing in Europe over the past 4.5 years. I know that on behalf of everybody that's here today, and those who are not, that I can pledge that we'll work each and every day to make sure that come the European election, that you receive the mandate that you so richly deserve. Yeah. Colleagues, if there's one thing that marks this party out, it's our capacity to confound our critics and win in the face of adversity and against all the odds. After decades of hard work and 10 years at the top, I'm pleased to report to conference that the DUP is still growing stronger each passing day. On this day and at this conference, we pause not just to celebrate a decade of the DUP as Northern Ireland's largest party, but more importantly, to plan for the future of our province and to plan for the future of our party. As unionists, our eyes remain firmly fixed on the goal of a better Northern Ireland safe within the United Kingdom. That's what brought all of us into politics, and it's the cause that motivates us still. We have come a long way in a very short period of time. To all those who have been on the journey from the very start and have stood with us through all weathers, I say thank you for your loyalty and your dedication. To those who have joined us along the way, I say thank you for helping us to make this party not just a voice within unionism, but the voice of unionism. Yeah. And to those who have joined us in recent days, I say welcome on board, because with your help, our best days still lie ahead. Party Chairman, I really don't want the party to look back a decade or two from now and say, those were our glory days. I want us to be able to say, those were the days that we built the platform that launched the party to even greater heights. And looking around at the talent that we have at all levels within the party, I believe that we can look forward to the future with real optimism. It's been our capacity to attract new members and supporters that has kept us moving forward. We never rest, nor do we ever grow complacent. We just move on to the next goal and to the next target. We are focused on our objectives. Our objectives are to preserve the union and to build a better Northern Ireland. Amidst all the challenges and difficulties, it's easier to forget that never in our political lifetime has the union been stronger or our place in the United Kingdom been more secure. When times are difficult, we must never lose sight of this fundamental reality. The setbacks and knocks that we take are small when compared to the bigger picture. Mr. Chairman, there's no doubt that the last year has been difficult. But this afternoon, my job isn't to attribute blame, but to offer solutions. As a society, we're on a journey to a better future. After decades of conflict, we knew that the road would not be smooth or straight, because success is seldom for the faint-hearted. There are those who have urged us to give up because the obstacles are too high or the challenges too hard. But that would be the greatest mistake that we could make. Real progress is being made. We sometimes need to lift our gaze from the close and immediate and fix our eyes on a longer and wider horizon to see just how much and by how far our province has progressed. There's also a danger that we grow complacent about what has been achieved. It's easy to take for granted the level of peace and stability that we have won. But this past year, we have also seen the consequences as a community of stumbling even for a short time. And the harsh reality is that for us, there is no such thing as a world where the difficult decisions can be left to others. There is no such thing as being able to say that we can transform our society without the discomfort of having to listen to our opponents carping and criticising. But nobody should be misled. The fallout from failure is conflict. That's the history of the past, and it's a warning for the future. And we ignore that at our peril. I want to see a better Northern Ireland. But I continue to believe that the traditions that make up our community are interdependent. If we are to move forward as a society, we must move forward together. And for unionism to play its fullest part, we must provide confident and positive leadership. We shouldn't be defensive or apologetic about who we are or about what we believe. And we should be proud of what we have achieved. We should be certain of ourselves and optimistic about the future. I really hate it when I hear people talking Northern Ireland down. I'm proud to be from Northern Ireland, and I'm proud of Northern Ireland. Earlier this year, we played host to the world's political leaders. The event was hosted in County Fermanagh, now officially judged to be the happiest place in the United Kingdom. And you can see why. The Prime Minister's decision to choose Northern Ireland to host the G8 summit wasn't just a manifestation of our place within the United Kingdom, though it was that. It was also David Cameron's personal commitment and confidence in us and in Northern Ireland. But it was also a demonstration of just how far we have advanced as a society. We all know that that decision would have been unimaginable just a few years ago. And even more so, that it would become the most peaceful G8 summit in history. Good old Northern Ireland. It's said that a week is a long time in politics. But I have to say that for me, the last 10 years have just flown by in an instant. On Tuesday, we mark a decade since the DUP was entrusted with the leadership of unionism and with responsibility for leading our province. In that time, Northern Ireland has been transformed. And it hasn't been the result of some fortuitous event, nor is it the consequence of an uncalculated policy. It's because of our carefully devised and executed strategy. It happened because we charted a course to a better future. It happened because we took the difficult decisions. It happened because we held out for the right terms. It happened because we stood together, not just in good times, but in tough times too. It happened because we refused to be knocked off course, and it happened because we won and kept the respect and trust of the Ulster people. You see, leadership isn't about doing the safe, quick, and easy things. It's about doing the right things. And because of the decisions that we have taken, we stand stronger and more united today than ever before. Not just able to look back on past glories, but but building for the next generation. The DUP is the only unionist party with the strength, the skills and the strategy, and indeed the vision to succeed. We are now, realistically, the only serious, plausible and viable unionist party. In short, we're not simply the largest unionist party, we're the only unionist party capable of leading unionism. We're the only party in Northern Ireland representing people in councils, our assembly at Westminster and in Europe. And I particularly want to thank Nigel, not just for his always supportive role as deputy party leader, but for the dedication and expertise in leading our party in the House of Commons. He literally has proved one thing, that when he's knocked down, he just gets right back onto his feet again. A decade ago, the challenges being faced appeared insurmountable. But steadily and surely, we provided the leadership to put things right. We delivered a fair deal for the people of Northern Ireland and demonstrated leadership that's working. 10 years on, I'm not here to claim mission accomplished. But I do unambiguously claim that we are on course and on target. We are getting it right. We showed strong leadership in challenging times, and now we are keeping Northern Ireland moving forward. So today it's fitting that we reflect on what has been achieved, while at the same time carefully laying the foundations for the next generation. Just 10 years ago this week, unionism was facing a massive decision: to endure more of the same defeatism and decline, or make a new start and take a new direction. History will record that the election in November of 2003 was a pivotal moment for unionism. On that cold autumn day, voters went to the polls to signal the start of a new era. The DUP was mandated to bring about change, to stand firm when needed, but to make progress when opportunities arose. For the first time ever in a Stormont election, the DUP emerged as Northern Ireland's largest party and the authentic voice of 21st century unionism. I'm sure many of you remember just 5 years earlier, as we filed out of the King's Hall in Belfast, how our political obituary was being written. Yet in 2003, against all the odds, we emerged 3 assembly seats ahead of the Ulster Unionist Party. Now, there were those who said that this result was a one-off, a flash in the pan, and that before long the natural order of politics in Northern Ireland would return. They said that the DUP holding 3 assembly seats more than the Ulster Unionist Party wouldn't last. And you know, they were right, because today we hold 25 assembly seats more than the Ulster Unionist Party. It's too easy to forget what it was like back then. The IRA remained armed and active. Stormont was suspended. Unionism was in crisis. Our constitutional future uncertain. That was the bitter legacy that this party inherited from the Ulster Unionist Party. We were told that we couldn't make progress. We were told that no one would negotiate with us. There were some who urged us to say no to everything and others who wanted us to say yes to anything. But we bided our time and we held our ground. Now, a few feeble and faint-hearted folk fled our ranks, but the rest of us held our nerve. We set out our terms, and in times, our terms were met. There were some who feared that it wouldn't work, and still others who secretly dreaded that it would. So I'm equally proud to say that we didn't evade our responsibility to say yes when our terms were finally met. But 6 years on, we can take the measure of where we are. Devolution at Stormont has underpinned peace. It has cemented constitutional stability. It has strengthened support for the Union. It has been the bedrock for the jobs and international investment that we have attracted. And it gives unionists a leading role, denied to them under direct rule, in determining the future of Northern Ireland. Does anybody seriously think that we would have achieved any of this if devolution had not been restored? Be in no doubt, without Stormont, rates would be higher, water charges would be introduced, grammar schools abolished, and student fees would have trebled. Who imagines if we hadn't taken a different course, if we had done what others would have had us to do, that we would have been having the PMS savers looking for money and finding none? Who believes that the part-time police reserve would have received their gratuity, or that Orange Halls would have been derated? Today we work with the Irish government on our terms and at our pace, but without Stormont, you can be sure that Dublin would have had its hands on the levers of power, while those of us who live here would have been left powerless and marginalised. But Mr. Chairman, I almost feel that I no longer need to make the case for devolution and for Stormont, because those who once claimed to be unalterably opposed to its nefarious existence are now part of the furniture, pleased as punch to be there. They love it so much you couldn't prise them out with a crowbar. Steadily but surely, we are building a country that the world sees as a sound business investment. And you don't have to take my word for it. Just look at the progress that has been made, even in the most difficult economic times. If only sometimes we could see ourselves as the rest of the world sees us, I believe we would have more confidence about what we have and what we can achieve. Mr. Chairman, during this past month, we've been remembering the terrible events of 20 years ago. No sane person wants to go back to those days. That's why it's so important that the DUP keeps on succeeding. The world of 2013 is a very different place to a decade ago. In 2003, we were in opposition and powerless. Today, we're in government and in power. That's the transition and transformation that we have undergone. There's still some in the Assembly, and they think that they can trash everything and take responsibility for nothing. Now, whatever superficial attraction that might have, it makes no contribution to the lives of ordinary people. And whatever that approach may be called, it certainly is not called leadership. Short-term, cynical, political expediency will never bring long-term results. I know you know that, but more importantly, the wider public knows it too. They can see through those who oppose everything but propose nothing. Some folks even take all of the benefits of being in the executive while pretending to the world that they're in opposition. It's bad enough that Gerry Adams claims never to have been in the IRA. Now we have two parties that pretend that they're not in the executive. The DUP's been elected to take decisions. We're the responsible party of government. Our political agenda must not be dictated by those who shout the loudest or dominate the airwaves, but by the overwhelming majority for whom living their lives, doing their jobs, and raising their families is a high priority. Mr. Chairman, this month is the midpoint of the current Assembly term. And you'll remember that our challenge was delivery. In the media, every problem or difficulty that the Assembly and Executive faces is examined in great detail and magnified even beyond recognition. Yet scant attention, if any, is given to our many successes and the progress that we have made. It's not just that we have created stability for the first time in a generation, or that we've laid the foundations for peace and prosperity. The facts demonstrate there has been real, tangible, and substantial progress on a wide range of measures and projects. In 2011, this party set out its seven key priorities for the Assembly term. They were summed up in 14 words: more jobs, low rates, tougher sentences, fix education, better health, work together, and strengthen unionism. Moreover, we declared that we should be judged on our delivery. So we justifiably will be judged in 2016 on the basis of how we perform against the goals that we set out during the 2011 campaign. So this halfway stage, in my view, is an ideal time for us to take stock of progress. Now, I know if you were to believe the ever-present discordant band of bemoaners, you would guess that I'm going to produce a very short list. Not so. Today, we are publishing a report on how we are performing against these benchmarks. But it's not just against these key tests that we are delivering. Right across government, the DUP, led departments, primarily are making real progress. So in order to confound and to silence detractors who say that we have achieved nothing, we're also publishing a list of 30 of this term's main achievements. In 2011, we put growing the economy and job creation at the centre of our campaign. As we emerge from the global recession, our unemployment level is lower than the United Kingdom average, and the number of people claiming unemployment benefit has decreased for 9 consecutive months. This happened because we are making Northern Ireland one of the most attractive places for companies to invest in. It's not just because of financial incentives, it's due in large part to the skills of our workforce, the loyalty of employees, the role of universities, the business-friendly environment, the access to ministers before and indeed after companies invest, and of course, our technological infrastructure and cost-competitive base. I want to pay tribute to Arlene and her team at Invest Northern Ireland for all that they do in taking our message to the world. We set ambitious targets. Already in this Assembly term, we have supported the creation of over 17,000 new jobs. We have secured almost £1 billion of investment commitments and over £200 million of private sector investment in research and development. We have taken the Northern Ireland message not just to the United States and Canada, but to places as far afield as China, India, Brazil, and the Middle East. And in a week's time, we're taking up Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's invitation to visit Japan. As a result of the pro-business climate that we have created, we have attracted more jobs than in any similar period in the whole province's history. We're also building a new economy around our creative industries. We have constructed new film studios in addition to the existing facilities at Titanic Studios. As well as international investment, we're also starting to see our own indigenous businesses developing again. As a result of decisions the DUP took in relation to industrial derating, we're saving businesses around £60 million every year. And thanks to the extension of the Small Business Rate Relief Scheme, we are saving businesses millions more every year. We persuaded the coalition government to devolve responsibility for air passenger duty on long-haul flights. We then reduced it to zero and saved our vital air link to New York. That was crucial for both international investment and for our tourism industry. Sammy Wilson and Nelson McCausland deserve real credit for helping home buyers by introducing the massive extension of the co-ownership scheme, which has assisted the purchase of more than 2,000 affordable homes to a total value of over £200 million. Well done, Sammy and Nelson. And the DSD has delivered almost 3,000 social homes by providing over £300 million. By not introducing water charges and by freezing the regional rate in real terms, we continue to have the lowest household taxation of any part of the United Kingdom. In fact, our local taxes this year are less than half of the average bills in England and less than 60% of those in Scotland and Wales. That's saving average householders in Northern Ireland between £2,000 and £3,000 over this Assembly term. And I'm delighted that Simon, who's now making his mark in the Department of Finance and Personnel, is extending the freeze on the regional rate to help hard-working householders. Well done. Keep it up, Simon. The Coalition's welfare reform programme will have a significant implication here in Northern Ireland. But we have a package which, if it is accepted, is the most generous that you'll find anywhere in the United Kingdom. We also want higher education to be open to all. That's why when the coalition government allows student fees to increase to over £9,000 a year, we refused to follow. We decided to freeze those fees in real terms. The total number of students accepted to Northern Ireland institutions increased to over 10,000 in 2012, with 1,500 new undergraduate places being provided in STEM subjects by 2015, and an additional 300 PhD places. And I want to pay tribute to Edwin Poots. Edwin undertook what is undoubtedly one of the most difficult and thankless jobs when he took on the role as Health Minister.